Hello, and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. Today's topic is business literacy. What is business literacy, and why does it matter for the business owner, someone starting a business, or for the employees, our workforce who are working for us? People who are competing for jobs. Well, business literacy essentially means having skills and an understanding about business basics, about the ability to communicate around those topics. It's about understanding the elements of business, from marketing and sales to human resources type topics to legalities to accounting and financial, the basics. Not talking about knowing debits and credits and all the rules of accounting if you're not the accountant for the business, but having an understanding of financial statements and how profit is generated, how costs work, how revenue and sales are a combination of our credit terms, of our sales pitches, our prospecting, our products that we're offering. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about business literacy. And it's really important for our workforces, for business owners, for everyone that's involved in a business, from the custodian cleaning the floors to the CEO to the person starting a business to the person joining a startup, that we understand the basic principles and concepts of business. When we have everyone in the business understanding the basics, then we are more able to understand how our role plays into the success of the business. So what we're talking about when we're talking about business basics and the literacy that we need to develop in our organizations, we're talking about understanding just what business is and what it isn't. And it's important for our purposes in business literacy to have that discussion with our workforce, whether it's the people we're going into business with or the people working for us, and so that we can tie everything that we're doing back into the core concept of what a business in general is, and then what our business is. And so let's talk about what a business is. In its most basic form, a business is an organization of people, one or more people coming together to provide goods or services or technology to benefit a customer and the community. It's also about solving problems and filling needs. So a business is formed to provide a market solution or fill a market need. And that's an exchange process. We're going to come in and provide technology, products, and services to a customer in exchange for them compensating for this. And they're going to compensate us at a level of what they perceive the value is, or what they think the value is in excess of what they have to exchange. A customer never pays more than their perceived value for what we're doing. And so a business is engaged in exchange of products, services, technology, an exchange of solutions. And that's what everybody in the organization is engaged doing. We are charged with providing that solution that the business is organized to deliver. And so a business can exist and not be profitable, but it won't exist very long. So businesses also have within its goals, its mission is to generate a profit. Because if we don't generate a profit, then we can't grow. We can't add more customers. We can't add more employees. We can't do more. So we have to be profitable as a business. And also understand that on the flip side, we hear nonprofits. And I hate that term, quite frankly, because it's nonprofit simply means it's not owned by stakeholders, by stockholders who are going to benefit from the profits that flow through the organization. A nonprofit is a for-profit for a purpose. So even a nonprofit organization is in business to make money, but they're in business to make money for a cause, to provide those services as a community or public benefit, not to generate profits that are going to go back to pay dividends and other things to the stakeholders, the owners. And so understand that any organization, but particularly a business, has to be generating revenue, has to be at least covering its cost, and ideally, we're in business to make money, to make more money than what it costs to be in business, to deliver those products and services. And that money we make, that's profit, goes to two different purposes. It can go back to compensate the owners of the business, those stockholders, those investors. It can go back into the growth cycle of the business, or it can go in to replace the existing structures and kind of hold a status quo. Because we all know things like if we're even not in business for ourselves, or we're working in a business and we know our computers, our cell phones, all the technology degrades over time. It gets slower. It's replaced by something else. And so a business is generating revenues and profits to have the ability to replace existing equipment also. So what is a business doing? It's organizing one or more people to come together to provide products and services that provide a market solution in exchange for value, for compensation, for money and payment from its customers. And with that money, with those profits, they're going to invest somewhere in their retirements, in new employees, in new equipment, in donations and contributions to nonprofits. Somehow it's going to go back to the community and to the stakeholders in the organization, one way or the other. So our basic principle is businesses are good things. Businesses have to have value in the eyes of a customer, in the eyes of the market, or they don't exist for very long. And so everything that we do as an employee, as a business owner, as an investor, as a service provider, as a selling products or technology to another business or to consumers, is in that cycle of business transactions and exchange of value. So the principles we want to emphasize in business literacy is how each functional area, how each person in their role in the organization contributes to this cycle of the business being able to exchange value, to give a solution, to fill a need, and exchange, get compensated for that at a price that includes profit. And so all of this impacts our communities. It impacts our communities because it creates jobs. It creates purchasing and exchange with other businesses. We pay taxes. We create a thriving business base in a community. And that is really critical to our livelihoods, to our ability to support our churches, to support nonprofits, to invest in causes and give donations, to support our children going to school, to have an infrastructure for roads to drive on, to have power on our in our businesses. So we really have to think in terms of businesses as what is the business that we're working in or that we own or that we're building or that we're growing? What is its mission? What is the vision for that business? And then what are the principles that we're going to operate under? And in terms of those principles and those goals that come out of those principles and the purpose of the organization coming together, the purpose of the business, we really have to stay focused on what it is that we need to do and do it well, do it effectively, do it efficiently, and do it consistently. A business exists for two reasons. It exists to fulfill the mission of providing that market solution, that product, that service, that technology in exchange for value, and exists to be a good citizen, a good return on investment for its stakeholders, and to have a public benefit in the fact that we are providing jobs, that we are growing and providing resources to the community. There's this ripple effect, a domino effect, have you ever dropped a rock in a puddle or in a pond, you've seen the ripples that go out from it. Well, every time we create a business and a business transacts with another business or with its customer or with a vendor, then those ripple effects spread out. And so it's a multiplying effect that one little transaction or one little thing that our business does or your business does ripples out and impacts other businesses and individuals. And so the better we are at business and the better we are at how we do business and how we bring those people that we're organizing together to do a job, the more we're able to impact others positively. And so every business should have a vision of where it's going to go. I think a lot of organizations struggle to have an identity, even in the current, where are you today? What customer are you serving? What product are you delivering? What problem are you solving? And if you don't know who you are today, you're not going to be here a year from now. You're not going to be here 3 years from now. So when we're talking about businesses and literacy, we have to understand how important it is for each business to have a vision and for the workforce within that business to understand that vision and that purpose for the organization. It is what is going to hold the disparate pieces together, the different functional areas, and let them know how things come together and how their role fits into this puzzle piece that is a business. Think about a jigsaw puzzle. I don't know about you, but when I do a jigsaw puzzle, it's been a number of years, but I used to find all the pieces that had a flat edge and then make that framework. Because I knew once I got the framework with the outer edges of the puzzle, it was going to be easier for me to fill in and reveal what the image was on the entire puzzle and make each piece of the puzzle fit. That's what a vision does. A vision is that framework. It's those flat pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that enable us to have a frame of reference. And once we have that frame of reference, we're able to bring all the other pieces of the organizational puzzle together to make the right picture. And so whether that picture is going to be a Rembrandt, or it's going to be finger painting from the fifth grade or kindergarten even, then it makes a difference. So what is that picture that you're wanting to reveal, and what is that framework? What are those outer pieces that are going to give you the parameters of that jigsaw puzzle that you're going to put together? And having that vision is really critical to keeping your business aligned, keeping everyone headed towards the same goal, to the same result. So when we think about it, we need a mission, and our mission is to have a successful business. It's to have a successful business that's profitable and growing, that enables us to help our community through job creation, through well-compensated jobs, through taxes that we pay, through infrastructure that we help build, and through the other things that we can do with our profits to reinvest in the community. And that is retirement funds. That's giving to our churches. That's giving to community groups. That's supporting nonprofits. It's all of those things that we do in our personal lives. So we don't want to think of businesses as something other than being a part of us. Businesses are a group of people coming together for a purpose, a mission. And that mission often and should include profitability for that business so it can stay around. And so when we're talking about businesses, they're structured differently. And I think that's something that we need to understand. And I've talked about this just a few minutes ago about the difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit. So whether you're nonprofit or for-profit, the big difference is that one is owned. A for-profit is owned by its stakeholders, its investors. And a nonprofit has no owners. And so it's controlled by its board, but there aren't stockholders that are going to benefit from the profits and the increase in value. And so that's the key thing. It's not whether one's going to be profitable or not profitable. They both have to be profitable and generating more than they cost to operate. And so whether that's a nonprofit, getting donations, generating program income, all of those types of things, or it's a for-profit generating sales and other revenues, they both have to generate profitability to sustain themselves and to grow. And any nonprofit or for-profit that can't be profitable has its days numbered. So that's something everyone in your organization needs to understand. Are you a nonprofit, meaning you're not owned by stakeholders, stockholders, and investors? Or are you for-profit and you are? A lot of the things in how we run a nonprofit and a for-profit should be the same when we're talking about robust systems. We might do the accounting a little bit differently. There's subtle differences, but the core principles of being a robust, effective, efficient, well-managed, aligned organization is critical to both of their success. And then we need to start understanding then about how for-profits and nonprofits can be organized in its legal and tax structures. Now, nonprofits can be tax-exempt, 501c3s and other tax-exempt organizational definitions and exemptions under IRS codes, but there can also be nonprofits that are not tax-exempt. And so we need to be aware of that. There are for-profits that are sole proprietorships, meaning one person owns it, or partnerships, meaning more than one person owns it, and they're controlling all aspects of the business, but there's no legal separation for a sole proprietorship or partnership from its owners. And so whatever happens to the business happens to the owners. And so the next step up is limited liability companies. And those kind of vary state by state. And that truthfully, that's the LLCs, I think, have more variance in their statutes and their codes of what they are in the 50 states than corporations do at this point. But a limited liability company offers some separation between an ownership liability and the owner's assets. If done properly and the limited liability things are held in place in the state you operate in, then it says, okay, the company is separate from its owners for certain things. It's separate legally, but not necessarily for tax purposes, because LLCs are typically taxed either as a sole proprietorship if you're a single person LLC, or if you're two or more owners in an LLC, you're usually taxed as a partnership, with the exceptions of being able to file certain documents to be taxed as a corporation or an S corporation. And so that leads us into the next level of ownership. What are corporations? Corporations are set up as a process to separate legally and for tax purposes the organization. So when we incorporate, we're essentially saying we're creating another entity. And if we think of an entity as a person, then a corporation becomes its own person. It becomes its own entity, meaning it's responsible for all of its legal actions, all of its transactions, all of its tax liability, all of that contained within that separate personhood of a corporation. So it's an entity. So it is owned in some proportions by the people who invest in it. So that can be one owner. It can be hundreds of owners. It can be thousands of owners. Publicly traded companies, it could probably be millions of owners. And so a corporation separates itself through steps in setting up the legal entity and the tax entity through the state in which it's incorporated in and through the IRS to say, I am owned by all of these people. However, I am separate from all of these people. So if a lawyer, let's say, is retained by a corporation to have it represent it, that lawyer is representing the best interests of that corporation. If that corporation is, that lawyer has also represented one of the investors in that corporation, well, there could potentially be a conflict of interest. However, setting that aside, we want to think about the legal aspects of this and say that corporation is the client. And so if the lawyer is advising the corporation, he or she has to advise that corporation as to what's its best action, what its best interests are, even if that is in conflict with that one investor that shares that same attorney. And so so that's a way to think about it. It's the corporation is its own entity. There are other types of entities and corporation types, limited liability partnerships, professional partnerships, those kind of things. And I'm not going to talk on those today. But when we're talking about business literacy, we need to get that basic understanding of legal entity types, of tax entity types, and why they matter, and why they will matter to our workforce and to us who start a business or start an organization, a nonprofit. And so when we're selecting our business structures, we have to ask some key questions. Are you going to be for-profit or nonprofit? In other words, are you going to own the business, or are you starting something that you're not going to own? What are your risks? What are the potential liabilities that are going to be created transactionally, financially, and every aspect of the business? And as if you're starting a for-profit, what are your liabilities as an owner or as the person transacting in this? So you're sole proprietor, you have full liability. There's no difference between you and the business. Your partnership, how much liability do you have there for what you're doing, for what the business is doing, and for what your partner is doing? Limited liability companies, corporations, S corporations, B corporations, all the different variations of legality of the legal entity types you need to understand. And why is it important that your employees understand what type of entity you are? Your employees become agents of your business, and they can create liability for you. And so they need to understand how your business is organized, what it means, and what the impact that is, just at the most basic level. So if you're interviewing for a job in my business, and my business is an S corporation, what is that going to mean for you in doing your business? If you're my accountant or my tax preparer, that's really critical for you to know, because it's part of your job to know how taxes are going to work in that S corporation. Being a flow-through entity, meaning my corporation's not going to pay taxes itself, but it's all going to flow through to my personal return. What's the impact if I'm an S corporation and I have employees? And let's say I'm fundraising and I want to take on some additional owners, but I still want to stay an S corporation. What if I have employees out there participating and helping me identify investors and do an authorized fundraising round, a regulated fundraising round? What does it matter? Well, we've had this happen with clients where they got in fundraising mode and they didn't realize that when an entity invested in them, a corporation or other entity made the investment, that disqualified them from staying as an S-corp. And so there were ripple effects to that decision to take funds in. And so it's really important to have clarity of vision and clarity of communication as to what type of business you're in and what decisions impact your legal and tax entity structures, and things that your employees may do on your behalf, not even realizing that they can put things at risk. And I think this is at LLCs, sole proprietors, partnerships, that's even more critical to understand. And so when we're thinking of what legal entity and what tax entity, we have to think about that vision and that mission for our business. Where are we taking it? What do we ultimately want to achieve? Where are we going? And so that, are we for-profit or non-profit? What kind of are our liabilities? Do we want people to be, are we going to be the only person owning it, or are we going to have other people owning it with us? Down the road, are we going to need outside investors? What kind of assets is it going to take? Are we developing technology that's going to take a tremendous amount of investment? Or say we're developing vaccines or some kind of biotech item that takes a process of going through the FDA approval and testing and all these kind of things. And so what kind of assets are we going to need? What kind of capital are we going to need to take our business to the level to fulfill that vision that we have for where we're going to grow? Maybe we're just a mom and pop. Maybe we're a lifestyle company and we just want to grow a business large enough to have our family working there to sustain it and to have something to retire on and still leave something of value to our children. So making these kind of decisions and walking through those and developing the skills and the understanding of this is important for us to understand and be literate in the nomenclature, in the impact this has on our organizations. And this kind of leads me to one of my pet topics, I think, right now that it really hits close to home, is that in this context, we have to think of the integrity of the business. And that business integrity that includes values and includes ethics, it includes our code of conduct and the culture within our organization. So over and above the legal and the tax form that our businesses are taking, we really have to embed in our organizations the values that we hold, the standard of performance that we're going to demand of our employees, of our organization, of our business. Way too often I run into businesses that have challenges with what the owner holds and has as values, what the investors have and holds as values, and the people managing and run the business on a daily basis do, that are in conflict with those values, because those values aren't shared, or those values aren't clarified, or the performance metrics, the thing that's going to get rewarded in the business, is not in line with the goals and objectives, the values of the business. So people perform based on what they get rewarded for. And when you reward bad behavior, bad ethics, lack of integrity, then that's what you're going to get more of. So when your culture, your values are not in line with your performance metrics for your organization, when you're not walking the walk and talking the talk and rewarding the walk and the talk, then your business gets out of sync. And you, as the leader of your business, have a role in communicating the values of your business. That's social responsibility, that's your fiduciary responsibility to your investors, that's regulatory compliance. That's a whole lot of things that you have to think about And where are you going to draw the line? Where are you going to say to your team, to your employees, to your organization, to your business, that this is what we stand for? I see a lot of companies get into conflict because they say one thing and they let their employees do another. Or they reward one thing and that's what they're going to get. And so if it's sales at any price and you're going to get rewarded on sales, that's all anybody's going to care about. If that doesn't include profitability, then that's not going to get rewarded. I can make a sale and never make a profitable sale. So I can have huge growing sales numbers and be losing money hand over fist and be out of business tomorrow. Or I can be making sales and be profitable but never have cash flow into my business because my salespeople provide such great credit terms that no one ever has to pay their bill. So you have to think about how your values, how your performance metrics and everything align. And I don't care what business you're in, you should never be willing to do the thing that just gets you by. That you don't sit down and make a decision and say, well, let's see what we can get away with. No, from my perspective in my business, I want to do everything the right way. I want to be legal. I want to be ethical. I want to have integrity. I want to keep my word and do the things I say I'm going to do. And I want others to keep their word and do the same things that they commit to do when they're working with me. So we really need to focus on that. And that really translates and differentiates you in the marketplace. Your customer who knows your word is good, that when you make a mistake, and all of us do, that you're going to make it right. You're going to apologize. You're going to say, yes, we made a mistake. Let us make it right. We're not going to try to pass the buck or blame something or do any of those kind of things. And so when we're thinking about our vision for our business and our business literacy, part of our business literacy for ourselves and again for our workforce is understanding that our values translate into how we treat the customers. Our ethics and our integrity and how we conduct our business can become a competitive advantage and differentiate us in the marketplace and make us be of higher value to the customer who may want to spend a little bit more money for our product, our service, our technology when they can still get something cheaper just because they know the integrity of how we do business. And that gets us to something that's really critical that we need to understand in our businesses as the workforce, as the owner, is marketing and branding and positioning our business. What are we in to do? What are we in to deliver? And how do we stand out in the marketplace in the right way? So often our products, our technology, our brand, our visibility is what people think of and how we compete. But there are a number of businesses, and I'm not going to go into which ones today, but they have a business model that doing business well and doing business with integrity and always doing the right thing has made them stand out in the marketplace and have market visibility over and above the quality of their products or service. They don't shirk on the product quality, the service, the technology advancements, or anything else, but they stand behind their business model, and part of that business model is their integrity and in how they serve the customer. And so when we're marketing, we want to understand how we're positioning, and you've probably heard the four P's, but that's the marketing mix. We're going to talk product, we talk price, promotion, and we talk about placement when we're talking about marketing. We're talking about finding in the market opportunity, that pain point, that need that's not being filled, and then we're going to provide that solution to that pain. We're going to fill that need, and we're going to do it profitably. And so in our market, we're focusing on building a value proposition, a concept, a vision in the customer. And then when they hear our brand, when they hear about our product, when they hear about us and the technology or the solution that we're delivering, they see value in it and that we stand out from our competitors. And so it's important whether we're doing a physical product, whether we're doing technology, whether we're doing an online store or we're brick and mortar, whether we're a service company or a retail. Whatever it is we're engaged in, our product needs to be well packaged so that it positions itself to confirm that we are capable of doing what we're saying, and that it, and that we're going to do it well and in such a way that it's it seamless integration into the customer's life. So let's say we can solve a problem, but it's too expensive or it's too complicated for the customer to implement. Either one of those things, being too expensive or too difficult to implement, is going to keep the customer from adopting our solution. And so when we're thinking about providing solutions, it's not simply enough that we can solve the problem. We have to solve the problem with a value that is equal to or in excess of the price we're going to be charging the customer. And so, again, that gets into that product, the price, how we're going to position it and promote it in the marketplace, and how we're going to place it in terms of competition. And so we often think of marketing as an art, just as management is an art. It's important that we understand how to hone our organization, everything that we say, everything that we do, every time we touch a customer or a prospect with our message, that they get what we do and why they need to buy from us and what it's going to do for their life. And that's about target marketing, because I think too many organizations don't understand, and our workforce doesn't understand, that we're not trying to solve every problem for every person that's potentially in the world. We have limited resources and we have limited time. And so we're going to focus in on some segment of the marketplace that we can serve and serve well and produce value for them, and in terms produce profits for our business. And so while we could sell our product, let's say we have pencils, we could sell our product to anybody that needs a writing instrument, that needs to communicate. Well, who's going to be interested in that pencil? Well, that really depends. Somebody that's used to, is always typing, using technology, is not going to look for an old-fashioned pencil. Maybe a school student, so we're going to look at schools. Well, who's the primary buyer and who's the end user? We're going to go through those types of things and understanding what a target market is. And once we know who is in our target market and the problem that we're solving and the value that they're going to place on it, what benefits they get out of it, then we're going to be able to do strategies to find that customer, that prospective customer, and reach them with our message, and we're going to connect it. I have a colleague that always said, when we're doing anything with a customer or trying to get a message out to someone, we want to become a customer, we have to be aware of whether they have Velcro on the brain for our message. And that means people only pay attention to things that are relevant to them. They only have Velcro, and things are only going to catch their eye and stick in their mind when that problem is theirs, when that need is theirs, and they're either looking for the solution, are aware that they need to look for a solution, and we need to engage with them. So our marketing and our promotions need to be honed to go to where our target market is with a message that they're going to get and that's going to stick in their mind. And so that is critical to our success. So while we're thinking of our brand and our marketing and positioning our products, that flows into the really critical element of sales in our business. We can market all that we want. We can get all the prospects in the world. But if we can't convert them to a sale, then our business is not going to succeed. And so salespeople are traditionally thought of as those that are going out and making the pitch, closing the deal, and making things happen. And so that's true. That is the person who is closing the deal with the customer. They're going out and they're making the pitch. They're making that value proposition come alive for the prospect and converting them for the customer. They're making the deal. But when our businesses are successful, we all have to be engaged in that sales process. And what do I mean by that? Every person in the organization is a part of the sales process from the context of how the business execute. Are we going to be able to keep our costs down? Are we going to be able to execute the mission of the business, that vision to deliver a product that's perceived as valuable because we solve a problem, we fill a need, and do so in a way that the customer wants to do business with us, that they feel valued as the customer, not just in the point when we're making the sale or we're doing the transaction, but when they call with a question. Are their invoices correctly? Are things delivered on time? Is everything that our sales force that's making the deal promising, and that our brand message and our marketing is promising, is it happening? I don't know how many businesses I've done business with as a consumer or as a business that the product was fine, right? It's what they promised. It was the price. It was delivered. But I got an invoice for, say, 3 times the amount, or something was wrong in how after they closed the deal. And that damaged the value I felt, the satisfaction I felt with doing business with them. And I can use one big example is when we redid the outside of our house. We did siding, we did windows, we did doors, we did the roof. We basically did everything on the outside of the house in one fell swoop with one company. And things went wrong. There was defective siding. They broke things. They did damage when they put the siding on. They left the house unsided for weeks. They broke the concrete pads in the driveway. They killed the grass. They killed the landscaping. And when I talked to the owner of the company, his response was, well, I haven't charged you anything yet. So, and like, he was doing me a favor. Well, I bought something. I wanted to work with one company, one contractor, to get everything done efficiently. And the amount of chaos and damage that they did, the fact that we were paying when we were finally satisfied didn't matter. The price wasn't going to go down. But that attitude of, you should basically be grateful that I'm doing business with you and I haven't charged you yet, when everything was wrong. That type of attitude damages your reputation in the community. And you can advertise, you can do anything you want to the nth degree, but one bad customer experience that customer shares with all of their friends and anybody they ever meet or anybody they ever hear of that's thinking of doing business with that business, that cannot easily be undone, and it's very expensive. So everybody in the organization is part of the sales process. It's part of customer service, and we have to understand that. And so whether that's in keeping costs down, it's whether it's making sure products and services come in on order, on time, the order's fulfilled properly, the invoices are correct, all of us are part of a bigger sales process and customer retention process than simply going out, knocking on the door. And there's nothing simple about that either. But it's sales process in this day and age is more than the salesperson calling on a prospect and getting the sale. So we have to think about that. We are all constantly in sales mode within the organization. But in the traditional sense of sales, we're talking about the business's ability to do business development, to generate leads, to get qualified leads. You can look in the phone book and get leads, or online and get leads, or you can go to the Secretary of State's office and get a list of every business that's opened in the past year and call them a lead. If they're not qualified, if they're not the people with the problem, with the need for the solution that you're providing and have the money to buy it at the price that you need to sell it at, then they're not a qualified lead. And so you have to understand that. And you have to have those qualified leads be the ones that are looking for the value proposition that you're presenting. And so that differentiation, that ability to narrow down who you're going to talk to, who you're going to do a brand message for, and who you're going to reach out to, is really important, because then the pitch comes, that sales pitch that says, this is why you need to buy from us, whether that's in an advertising, print ad, TV, radio, social media, whatever it is. When that pitch is made and you get it to the right person through the right channel, then that's where the sales engagement starts to begin, and you can negotiate on terms. You can ask for the sale, and then you can support that customer to retain that customer after that one single transaction. And so it's important that we understand the role of marketing, the role of branding. We understand the sales role and how everyone in the organization contributes to the ability to make that sale, how business development connects all of those different elements together, how we are working together as an organization to get the customer to make the deal, to have the best price, the best value, the best quality, the best delivery, and everything in that process. And so that's what we really have to be focused on when we're communicating that we understand business. If you're going to enter into interview with a small business, a new business, an old business, an established business,
an employee
business,
is most valuable to a business,
a multinational,
that employee,
whatever you're going
gets
in, to
what
apply
the business
for a
is engaged
with,
in, and to, why the business does what it does.
You
when
have
they share
to be
the values,
able to
they
speak
share
the
vision,
and understand
they
what
know
their
the
value
mission, and they know how they fit into the organization.
And what
whether we're in sales,
from,
we're in accounting,
for,
we're in marketing, we're in business development, we're in customer service, we're in production. Whatever our specific role is in a business, we all come together in that organization to execute. And so that's why I like to say we're all in sales, we're all in finance, because when it comes down to making revenue, to generating sales, to making profitable sales, then everything each of us does in the business contributes to that success. And so a lot of people don't understand the financials. I don't know how many people I've met with when they've started a business, and maybe there's three or four of them in the business, and I ask them, well, who's in charge of, you know, HR, and who's in charge of finance? And they'll say, well, Joe over there's got HR because he's good with people, and Sarah over there's good with numbers. She's good at math, so we've got her doing the finance. And that's great. If you're great with people and you're good with numbers, that's good. But that doesn't necessarily translate to financial understanding, accounting, clarity, compliance, and a well-managed, well-run workforce in the HR aspects of it. So we need to kind of circle back and understand that everything we do in our role in the organization and everything we don't do gets reflected in the financial statements of the business. And just because someone's good at math and just because somebody's good with people doesn't mean that the accounting and the HR aspects of the business are being properly led and managed. Finance and accounting, human resources, compliance, payroll, those are very specific skilled sets that are dependent on being done according to rules and regulations, according to the requirements that are set at a federal, state, and local level, or through accounting standards and HR standards and practices. And so it's important that we understand that the business's structure and liabilities are impacted by how we execute in the financial and how we execute in the human resources aspects of our business too. So let me talk about human resources first a little bit and why it's really critical to the organization when we're recruiting our workforce, when we're recruiting our leaders, our managers, everyone from, again, the custodian to the CEO, the HR role is critical in making sure that everyone knows and understands what they're being compensated for, how they're being compensated, and what their role in the business is, what their job responsibilities are, what the performance expectation is. And then the HR organization has to make sure that the rest of the organization keeps those promises and stays compliant according to rules and regulations. A lot of times the first thing we think about in compliance aspects are the payroll. Is it being properly executed? And that gets down to not just the hourly rate or the salary level, but things like overtime, prevailing wage agreements for government contractors. If we have a union shop, there's all these different things that come into impacting how payroll and timekeeping and pay for performance, all of that comes together. And so if we're not doing it well, that takes us back to the liabilities and the risks of the organization. And some of those risks and liabilities cannot protect the owners or the people executing certain tasks in an organization from liability. So there are certain things like accurate payroll preparation, tax remitting the taxes, sales and use tax preparation and filings. There are certain things in the organization, well, there's not only liability for the company, but there's liability for the employee or the person preparing and executing that aspect of the business. Because when we sign off on things, it's saying, we're putting our name on it and saying, this sales and use tax filing
is correct and complete and reflects the liability the company has to the states, the counties, the local municipalities for which that sales and use tax is being collected and remitted. And by putting our name on it, we're taking the liability, we're taking accountability for that accuracy. And so as employers, as business owners, as employees, we have to understand when liability is being incurred by the business and by ourselves as individuals performing a certain role in the business. There are bad actors that do bad things, and there are people who do things unintentionally. And just because it's unintentional, it doesn't mean you're not liable for the mistakes and you're not going to be held accountable for those. And so it's really important in the organization to understand how critical properly managed, properly executed human resource employee-related tasks are. The strategy, the recruiting, the retention, the compensation, all of those types of things, the employee manual, our policies and procedures related to overtime, to time off, if we're required to comply with federal laws on FMLA, on other types of laws, then we have to understand those and how they come into play. And then we also have to understand fiduciary roles of things like if we're collecting and remitting on behalf of our employees, their part of the payroll taxes, those have to get paid. Or if we're managing flexible spending accounts, if we're managing their retirement accounts, there are fiduciary roles that require us in HR and in financial aspects of it to make sure things are being done properly, the records are being kept correctly, and that the monies are being put in the accounts that they're supposed to be in and remitted to the government when they're supposed to be remitted to the government. And that's really critical for us to understand. So our literacy in understanding those aspects at the 40,000 foot level, at the 20,000 foot level, and maybe not at the debit and credit or the specific execution level, but we need enough knowledge and literacy to understand when things are right, when things are being done properly, and when they're not. And so now let's talk about the financial aspects of the business, the accounting for the business, those debits and credits. And I'm going to tell this joke. I probably told it a number of times on the show, but there was this guy and he went to work for this accounting firm. And every morning, the senior partner, he'd go into the senior partner's office and he'd watch him. And the senior partner would unlock his top left desk drawer and he'd look at it and something in it. And he'd close the door and lock it. And then he'd go about his day. Well, one day the senior partner didn't come in because he had died. And everyone had seen that senior partner every day of his career when he was in his office unlock that top left desk drawer, look at something, nod his head, and lock it back. So now was the time they wanted to know just what was it he was doing every day looking in that top left drawer. And all he was doing was looking at a little note that reminded him that debits are on the left and credits are on the right. And so I think the accountants out there will probably appreciate that. But a debit and a credit simply means that. It doesn't mean plus or minus. It means debits are on the left and credits are on the right. And what makes the difference is which account those debits and credits are hitting. If it's an asset account, a debit increases and a credit decreases. If it's a revenue account, you know, a credit increases and a debit decreases. And so that transactional level of debits and credits and which side of the is an increase and a decrease isn't what most people need to understand. What you need to understand is the accounting equation that assets and liabilities equal the equity invested, the assets equal the liability and the equity invested in the company. So that's an equation that has to balance. The assets in total equal the amount that you've borrowed and the amount that you've put in as an investment, as an equity person in the organization. So when we're doing the math of the business, those have to balance. But there's a lot that comes into play into the asset accounts and the equity accounts and the liability accounts. And those decisions are point in time reflection. So when we look at a balance sheet, it's a snapshot of all the decisions that you've made about what assets to acquire and hold and what liabilities to incur and what investments have been made into the business. And so at the end of every year, at the end of every month, or at every day, when you look at that snapshot, It's just a point in time reference, where a P&L statement is a transactional statement and it covers a period of time. So your operating year, your fiscal year, and it reflects all of the transactions that have gone into impacting the balance sheet accounts. So if we think about that, so revenues come in and they're hopefully collected as a payment, and that means cash goes into the cash account, an asset account. We take that cash out to pay a liability. There's those kind of or an expense. And so we're transacting constantly. And so a P&L statement, a profit and loss statement, reflects the transactions that have gone on in the business that result in the point in time snapshot of the balance sheet. And so when we're looking at those period expenses of our rents, our activities, the direct costs of producing the product or service that we've sold and generated revenue, those are the type of things that we're looking at to analyze and understand what is and isn't happening in a business. If we run a great big marketing campaign and we're out there pushing a particular product, we can isolate, hopefully, and track back what expenses were in that marketing campaign, and then we're going to track it back to the revenues it generated and the costs that were associated with it, and we can look to see how effective that marketing campaign was in connecting to the customer and getting it in, and then how effective was the business at delivering that sale, that product, at a cost that was effective and enabled us to have profitability and cover not just the direct costs of generating that product, but our operational costs that are shared across all of our products. And so we need to understand our financial statements and what they tell us that we were doing and what they tell us that we weren't doing. A lot of times businesses get tight on the budget, and so they stop doing certain things. They might stop advertising and stuff because their sales aren't there. And then they start realizing sales are going down even more because they stopped their advertising and they stopped their marketing. They stopped the things that helped them generate sales. And so they get in this downward spiral because they stop spending on the things that help them generate sales. And so rather than stepping back and saying, okay, here's my P&L and here's my balance sheet and here's what we've been doing and what's working and what's not working. What are we doing that's generating revenues? What are we doing that's generating costs? How are these matching up? Did this marketing and advertising campaign work? Did this social media campaign work? We need to evaluate, and we need to have cause and effect between things and have relationships between it. And so when we're able to read our financial statements, when we're able to have a discussion and look at the results that we're generating in our department or in our job or at the business as a whole, then that enables the business to be stronger. Because if we can relate to what our job does and where it contributes to revenues or where it contributes to costs, then we're able to help improve the performance of the organization. And the more literate we are and the more articulate we are in being able to understand about how income statements or profit and loss statements work, how our balance sheet reflects our investment in the business and the long-term options for the business, where the P&L statement is reflecting what's going on now and where things are going, then we're able to know where our next step has to be, to know where we are doing things right and we want to do more of what we're doing right, and where we're having issues and where we want to do less things like that. Or maybe we need to make an investment because somewhere in our organization we have a bottleneck and we're constrained and we're not able to be as effective or efficient in what we're doing. We may need a different marketing campaign. We may need to update some manufacturing piece of equipment. We may need to do something differently. But if we're not able to read and understand our financial statements of the business, our department, our little portion of the product or the profit and loss statement, then we're not able to make informed decisions on what we need to do differently and what the business's next step is. So when we're talking about business literacy in the terms of our markets, our marketing and our sales, our business development, how that flows into our financial results and how important it is to recruit and retain and compensate people on the things that we want them to perform on, and how all of those elements to come together to make sure that that big jigsaw puzzle that is our business, that is our success metrics, comes together. You know, we're putting that the flat pieces together, that framework of the jigsaw puzzle, and then we need to make every aspect of every piece of our business puzzle come together so that the pieces fit. We have the right people doing the right things at the right time. Our marketing, our branding, our sales messaging, our value propositions all come together and get properly reflected on our financial statements. We have everything working to the best effect for our businesses. And so if you want to work in a business, you want to start a business, you've already started a business and you're struggling, then you need to get literate pretty quickly about business and how things come together, how all of those pieces in the framework have to be in place to make you more efficient in bringing the other pieces together. So what's your vision? What's your mission for your business? What do you need your organization to align to do? If you're coming in to be a member of the workforce, you're looking for a job, and you can come in and be literate in the language of business, you're going to be a much more valuable employee from day one for any business and any job that you take on. It may not be your role to understand the P&L, but if you understand the P&L, the profit and loss statement, then that gives you an advantage over someone who doesn't in the organization. And so step back from where you are right now and check your business literacy and get literate. Do some reading, do some research, hit some great websites that have videos and information on them about doing business and the different types of legal entities, the different sizes of business, about competitiveness, about marketing and target marketing. Read a little bit, get the basics there, become business literate, and your business or your career inside of a business will be much more successful and profitable for everyone. This is Lee Strickland. You're listening to Focus on Business. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things.